Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 34. Today is November the 24th, 2014. We're going to talk about GMOs and the impact they have on our lives. It's Kirk Pettis, Eric Taylor, Chelsea Como, and myself, Matt Winterer. Let's talk about them evil GMOs.
Genetically modified organisms.
Yes. So I'll give you my a brief take that I have on kind of GMOs, and we can go from there. So genetically modified organisms have been around in some context for thousands of years, you know, starting back in ancient Mesopotamia, where corn was bred to be a specific strain. A resistant strain, a productive strain. So you could call, you know, you could call ancient corn the, you know, the beginning of GMOs. And I view, my view on GMOs is the same as my view as a gun or a knife or any other technological instrument, that it can be used for good, can be used for bad. Because you've seen over the last, you know, 50, 75 years where GMOs have been used more and more, there have been more and more productivity in certain crops, soybeans, cotton, corn, et cetera. But of course, with that, there are issues, you know, with any technology, there are issues. And, you know, some people think that those issues are incendiary, you know, maybe, you know, negative or even, you know, come from a evil perspective. And my thought on that topic is, you know, that may or may not be the case, but GMOs, they have yielded a lot more capacity since really been utilized in the current context.
Well, yeah, but I just think it's a stretch of the definition of GMOs to say that it's been utilized for thousands of years. I don't think that was the. How long do you think the definition of GMO, genetically modified organisms, has been out there?
Not that long, but I'm just kind of illustrating
that. To me,
that's
just spin then. To spin it to say that cross pollination, cross breeding of plant species is GMO.
Well,
it's total BS.
But that's a genetic modification, though.
It
like
is.
Like from a literal definition.
So
that's
then
a genetic
humans
modification.
Are genetically modified as well by just breeding with other cultures. It makes no sense to me. That's just life, and that's how plants, the nature, how nature works. Is through cross-pollination.
If it were natural process, but if you're specifically taking one strain and saying, I'm going to intentionally modify it so that I'm getting these results.
Yeah, but how they would do that is by pollination, not by under a microscope.
Well, who
or
cares?
By any scientific means. It was more just of how the knowledge of plant life from the pollination through the spring to the growth, you know, the flowers that grow into fruits or any vegetable or what's wheat, grain.
Yep.
But I think it's just conjecture trying to tie in something good and something that's been done always through life, and then taking a new instrument and doing it specifically through scientific. I don't consider having to. I mean, the way that you can splice going into the DNA and splice things, you can't just cut and paste like they say you can. You have to add certain things that make, I wish I had the correct terminology here. Let me think. Some binders that will adhere to the DNA and then to get the specific gene that you want into the DNA. So you can't just go and put that gene you want inside the DNA. You need certain binders to it that will attach to it. And usually that comes, and that's usually the harmful process that, it usually contains a form of virus or bacteria that it takes to do so.
Yeah, and I think what I was saying is genetic manipulation. Maybe it's not matching the genetically modified organism definition strictly, but for as long as there has been agriculture, like Chelsea is saying, there has been a desire to genetically modify strains to produce as much healthy produce or crops as possible that's resistant to predators, bacteria, etc. So it's not, you know, I think you might be splitting hairs a little bit. Basically, is saying that the desire to alter the genetic composition of produce products has been around and been utilized for a long time. And what I was saying is, it's a tool, and it can be used for good. Or the results could be somewhat negative. So
I see what you're saying, but it's like if you have a business that goes, let's say a corporation that's spread across the world or even across the country, you set up shop in one area, you might have to differ it for another area. So the local, you know, you might have to change a few parts of the business plan just to adhere to that local vicinity. So as a liberty sense, the most localized, sustainable is better. And what they did for thousands of years previously was modifying the food or the plant to be more hardy for that weather climate. Like you can't, like, so when people get up and decide to move, you know, who knows, they want to leave the area wherever they're living. They take their seeds with them and then they go somewhere else and they find out that those seeds don't grow very well in this new area. And then they take the local plants and cross-pollinate that way to make them more hardy for the local vicinity. And to me, that is by far a better way, more sustainable form of adaptation to your local environment. But what Monsanto and Dow and Cargill and what all these companies are doing are genetically modifying to be able to be used anywhere. So it doesn't matter about the climate as much. What it mainly started with is to be able to take the Roundup and the certain insecticides that they'd use, because those stuff that they use kills everything. So they have to have these genes in there to make it resistant to the spray that they put on them, or the pesticide, insecticide, so it won't just kill that off.
Right. So I think it's a lot of the protests and, you know, concerns that people have are not necessarily about the plant itself, but by making the plant resistant to these pesticides and insecticides, we're now using, 15 times more, or just like a vast amount of pesticides compared to what we used to, because now we can spray down all the crops and the crops are going to be fine. But what about the runoff and the surrounding areas? And what kind of other safety concerns are presented when you're using a massive amount of pesticides and these really, really toxic chemicals?
Well, in defense of Monsanto, they say that you don't need to spray as much now, that because of the genetically modified genes they put in these plants, that because of the certain bugs won't be able to eat them because they'll die, and then I don't know, all sorts of whatever modifications that they end up doing. So they say they don't have to spray as much, but in long-term studies, what I've researched ends up being like what you said, Chelsea, that they end up having to spray more.
Or at least allows them to, because they're not concerned about the plant dying. And I don't know, this is more anecdotal than anything. This isn't a hard fact. But this has just been my personal experience. One thing, and I don't know if you can attribute this to GMO versus non-GMO or not, but I see a really big difference between the produce that I get out of my garden and the produce that I get from a grocery store. Would you guys say that that's because of genetic modification or just mass production, or what would you really attribute those differences to?
I'd say both.
To me, it's difficult to say because I don't think you're required to label produce GMO or non-GMO, right?
Nothing's required to be labeled GMO. You won't find anything labeled.
There's actually a big lobby to prevent people from doing that.
Right. Yeah. So you don't know. You don't know
because
what's GMO
the last
or
poll,
not GMO.
I saw a New York Times poll that said 53% of consumers would not purchase food products that contain GMOs. So that's why it's a big fight to not label food as such as GMO.
And right. So instead, we're seeing people voluntarily posting the fact that it's non-GMO instead of people being required to post that it is.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And actually, that segues pretty well into a clip, a Jimmy Kimmel clip that I have that kind of goes over what the average person on the street views GMO crops as. And it's people don't really know what GMO is, but they intrinsically know it's not good somehow. So it's kind of it's a funny clip. I'm going to roll this clip here.
It's lighten the mood.
Yep.
According to a new study that was done by Consumer Reports, a majority of packaged goods that are labeled natural are actually contain genetically modified ingredients, which makes it unclear, as to whether they are natural or not, because they grow, but they've been modified in a laboratory or whatever. Apparently, the FDA will allow companies to put the word natural on a product label as long as it says JKLOL on the back of the product. But critics of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, claim that they pose health risks. It's a complicated issue, though, because there isn't a lot of evidence to back that up. Still, some people are dead set against them. There's been legislation designed to limit GMOs. You see documentaries and angry Facebook posts about it. How many of you do not want GMOs in your body? Yes? Okay, a lot of people. All right. So, as I usually do when people take a stance on a complicated issue, I wondered how many people who are against GMOs really know what they are. So we sent a crew to one of our local farmers' markets to ask people why they avoid GMOs, and more specifically, what the letters GMO stand for. Enjoy.
Do you try to avoid GMOs in your diet?
I do. Yeah.
Tell me why.
There's just a vibration with GMOs. For me personally, just something that I don't particularly want to put into my body.
What does GMO stand for?
Genetically modified.
Yo.
I don't know.
Bishop Don Magic Wand, what is a GMO?
Well, I'm not really sure. You have to make me familiar with that. What is a GMO?
Do you try to avoid GMOs in your diet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why is that?
Just the effects, I guess, on myself.
What does GMO stand for?
Oh, man. Putting me under the grill. Let's see. I don't even remember.
Do you try to avoid GMOs in your diet?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because they're not good for you.
What is a GMO?
It's genetically modified. I don't know. What is it?
If you aren't eating whole foods, you want to eat what you're eating. You know what I mean? You
definitely
want to eat what you see. And you're avoiding processed food, but when the whole food is...
These people are driving next to us.
Avoid, you know, that's kind
whole
of
food is whole.
Making it a moot point.
What does GMO stand for?
Genetically manufactured. Oh.
What is a GMO?
A general modified ingredient, right?
What is a GMO?
It's something modified.
Do you try to avoid GMOs?
Sometimes. Not a whole lot, but, I try.
What is a GMO?
I don't know. I swear. I was just going along with it. I don't know what GMO is.
What is a GMO?
I don't know. I know it's like some corn bad stuff, right? I know it's bad, but to be completely honest with you, I have no idea.
What is a GMO?
I don't know.
What's the extra song here?
It doesn't affect me.
What's that?
I'm not sick.
What's the extra song?
The extra song?
It's just you.
You got a song going?
No. Well, I did for a moment there during the clip.
It's just you.
It's just you.
Oh, God.
You cut it off.
It's happening already.
It's happening. You're hearing the music.
The genetically modified organism.
And what's GMO spelled backwards?
OMG. Nice.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now we have to figure out what an OMG stands for.
Yep, so I think that's probably, what was that, one guy out of probably 10?
Yeah, but it doesn't say much.
Right. Well, I mean, he probably selected the ones that were funny for entertainment's sake, you know. But, like, the one thing that when you think about it, let's think about all the things that we were taught when we were in school about, like, what's healthy and nutritious as opposed to what we're now finding out might not be accurate. So, like, everybody remembers the food pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And how we're supposed to have just like a ton of carbs, like that should be the baseline, you know, for, you know, we have just a ton of those, a little bit of less for meats and less for veggies and fruits and all those things. And we're starting to find out that carbs aren't really that great for us. So part of me question
that,
you know, when people start talking about like what's nutritious and what's healthy, and we start, you know, making blanket statements about what people need to take in on a daily basis and understanding that each one of us as individuals have a different chemical makeup. I don't know. It's difficult to just have this standard and apply it to each individual and say this is what people should be eating. And when you think about how much money is spent on food, there's a lot of, you know, incentive there to then tell us, oh, this is bad or this is good for you in order to capture a market perhaps. So, I mean, I find it difficult to get really unbiased information on what's really nutritional. Do you think that part of this non-GMO project could be, you know, trying to capture a greater market share for specific types of food? Or do you think, you know, or vice versa, people saying, GMO is just fine. We're going to mass produce as much food as we can and capture the market and tell you that this food is fine when it's not.
Well, I mean, to go back to what you said a few minutes ago, Chelsea, about, you know, food versus growing yourselves versus buying in the grocery store, it depends on where the food came from, for one. Depends on how long it's been stored. Most fruits and vegetables get put into a vacuum-sealed room as soon as they're harvested to be independent and to be just released throughout the year. And so that it's put into a suspension state to where it doesn't continue to ripen and then go bad. So at these points, that who knows what that can do with the mass production of that effect. But then the other thing is that a lot of food that's brought in from around the world into America is irradiated through microwaves and gamma rays and such, which it destroys the bacteria, and some say it doesn't damage the nutrition as much, but in my opinion, it still does. But that's just my opinion. And
what are you basing that on?
What am I basing it on?
Yeah, I mean, if it's your opinion, like, did you do some research? Or are you just saying that?
Well, what these microwaves and gamma rays do is they destroy the DNA of bacteria. But the bacteria cells are larger than the vitamins inside the microscopic levels of the food itself. And so they say because it's smaller and they've perfected the measure of irradiation that it's doesn't destroy the nutrition like it destroys the larger cells. But there's a lot of parts to a vegetable or a fruit that's irradiated. So does it damage the skin then? Since I would assume that's probably a larger cell structure, you know, then I mean it destroys a faction of the material that maybe down at the very base vitamin level that they say it doesn't irradiate, but it all depends on the testing measures too. So I don't know. It's just my personal thing that I don't see that irradiation really helps that much, and then it can help out from faulty handling of food as well then. But where was I going with this? Why was I talking about it?
Can I interject real quick?
Yes.
This is something that's important to everyone, especially Matt. The Ferguson news has broke with no indictment. What do you think about that, Matt?
Riots are going to start.
I'm sorry. I'm very distracted this evening. I should probably preface this. I don't know. Everybody's listening to it after today, but it's November the 24th, 2014, and the Ferguson results are going to be released any minute now. And I'm halfway watching Twitter and halfway listening to the. I'm sorry. Yeah, no. I'm listening to the police scanner right now, and somebody just reported that there's a Grand Prix driving around with people with guns out the window. And yeah, I was trying to hear what's going on with that.
But yeah, Matt, what I was saying is that the verdict has been announced,
and they're saying there's no indictment. Yeah, I'm seeing that. So the police scanner's going crazy now. I'm serious. There's just call after call after call going on right now. But basically, I anticipated that this was going to be what was going to happen the entire time. And I think there's going to be rioting all over the country. It's not just going to be isolated to St. Louis.
Let's listen to what the governor has to say of Missouri.
I love it.
Later this evening, the St. Louis County prosecutor will announce the grand jury's decision. While none of us knows
and
what that will be,
what I wasn't looking for.
Our shared hope and expectation is that regardless of the decision, people on all sides show tolerance.
Shites.
Had a couple cocktails
mutual respect
before.
And restraint.
No matter what is announced, people will be emotional. I want people to think with their heads and not with emotion. No matter what, we have to remain focused on our long-term systemic changes that has to take place in our community. Our immediate priority is to ensure that people are safe and able to voice their concerns in an orderly fashion.
Over the next few days, we expect to see St. Louisans loudly and passionately expressing their views. We expect to see some of the best police officers.
If everyone would have just listened to our podcast, it would be calm and collect.
Everyone safe.
No real
that,
conflict
it
here.
It will be time to heal.
No real conflict.
To close the racial divide and to make St. Louis a better place for everyone,
it's not
regardless
a racial
of
issue.
Race or color.
It's
so that was
a racial issue. That's my
the governor presser a few hours ago trying to. I think Matt was anticipating this result, trying to calm what could be somewhat of a violent evening tonight.
Well, what's interesting is that this exact same thing happened actually in Minnesota about 5 years ago in Kasota, which is the town I grew up in, and. This guy basically got back from swimming with his friends, and it was broad daylight out. He was unarmed in his swimming trunks, and a police officer, and he was white, by the way. The police officer was white. He was white. So there was no racial motivation there. And shot him in broad daylight, killed him, and never went to trial for anything. He got paid administrative leave and then, you know, went back to work. So things like this happen, and just because the two parties happen to be of different, you know, ethnic backgrounds doesn't necessarily mean that that was the motive behind the situation.
Yeah, but there was no indictment. It's a little different part because the guy charged the officer. I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't
know the details
everyone.
Of this situation, though. You don't know the details
not
of the one in Dakota. Yeah,
no,
right.
But what
exactly.
I'm saying is, yeah, the one in Kasota was far worse, is what I'm saying. Then it's far more egregious than this case in Missouri right now, in Ferguson, that the cop had every right to do what he did. And there's countless a case of egregious acts that the police do today that could be covered, but this whole thing is just spun out of control because of supposedly race issues in our country, and I find it utterly deplorable that this is going on still, and it's all forced upon us through media manipulation and certain people that benefit from this kind of stuff. And it's a lot of smokescreen to cover what's our government is constantly doing, which we are trying to highlight.
I'm going to cut back into something real quick. I'll play for half a minute, and if it's not worth it, I'll stop it.
Long before this shooting occurred.
This is
prosecuting attorney. Cooperation between the local and the federal.
I think it's a victory of the rule of law, actually, for this Ferguson thing.
Investigation just days after the shooting.
Yeah, we don't want to listen to that. We don't need to listen to that.
Actually, I think from what I'm reading on Twitter, there's a whole lot of rhetoric that you get out of that. It's a lot of opinions, so.
Sure. So, Matt, you kind of anticipate there could be some ramifications over the next couple of days?
Yeah, I've been following this pretty closely. I know my father and I kind of had some conversations while watching the football game yesterday together, and we were anticipating that it would be a big deal down in Ferguson. And one of the things that I had the opinion of, naturally being libertarian, is I thought that having the National Guard there before the need had been proven was ridiculous. And I believe that even if people thought it was prudent to do that, I would still say that it's ridiculous to bring the military in prior to a need being established.
What I'm saying is you're
declaring a state of emergency before the state of emergency has happened.
No, but
we didn't even know what the verdict was. Kirk, we did not know what the verdict was. If the verdict was the other way, there would not be any kind of a riot.
No, there would be. This has been going on nonstop since. There's been riots, gang activity, threats. The cop's name was released, his address. People are trying to kill him.
Well, all I can say is his opinions differ.
Been going on this whole time that just because this court verdict is in now, it's just another media hyping event that the real guts of the situation has been ongoing for the last few months. And it's just despicable that the guy was not in the right of what he was doing, and he got shot for it. I'm sorry. You can't charge a cop, especially after punching him and then running away and then running back at him. I'm sorry. You can't do that.
Oakland right now has people laying in the middle of a street being outlined by chalk as they're hosting what's called a die-in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it would have been possible for the policeman to shoot him in such a way that he was stopped but not killed?
You shoot until the threat has been eliminated.
When you have a person that big, a bullet does not do much at all. We've all seen too many movies that someone shot and they just dropped to the ground dead. It doesn't happen.
Yes, it does. A family member who went to prison for shooting someone that broke into his house and not killing him. He shot the guy in the arm and the leg, stopped him, then called the police and had the police come over. It is possible to shoot someone to stop them and not kill them.
Yeah. It's called shooting until the threat has been eliminated. If you shoot somebody until they fall onto the ground, then you've eliminated the threat and you don't have to shoot them anymore.
Yeah, so that's what I'm getting at.
Cops don't aim for the leg. I mean, they're shooting to defend their lives.
Yeah.
They should be. The argument I'm saying is that why aren't they shooting for the leg?
Because that's not the way you. If you have decided to use lethal force, you have decided to use lethal force.
That is a decision you're trained to use.
It's an escalation of lethal force.
It is.
You're already at that level.
There's no analysis going on at the time.
Well, there should be analysis, and they're trained to.
There can't be. It's a split-second thing.
This is not about emotion here. There is escalation of force that police follow. They can use tasers. They can use pepper spray, but they determine at the time what escalation of force is necessary. And if they decide to pull a gun, then that's lethal force. And once they decide to use lethal force, they aren't trying to shoot somebody in the leg anymore. They're trying to use lethal force.
Yeah, and Chelsea, he had already previously attacked him.
I don't find anything wrong with that, actually. I find that to be the right
struggle for his gun earlier.
If there's a possible way to take someone down, stop the threat.
Hold on. Have you ever tried shooting a pistol before?
No, but I also didn't go through training to do so.
No, hang on. I guarantee you I can shoot better. Chelsea, I guarantee you I can shoot better than 95% of the police officers out there. Guarantee you. I shoot way more often than they do. And I could never, ever in a million years intentionally try to shoot somebody in the leg or the arm who was trying to attack me. I couldn't do it.
There's no feasible way. we're not Jack Bauer. That's a made-up TV show.
I'm talking about real-life situations. One of my very close family members had that situation, and he successfully did it, and he didn't go through police force.
Did he do that on purpose?
Yes, he did that on purpose.
He wasn't being charged at. I think if you have the time to think about where you're going to aim, then you probably have time to shoot them or get away. You could probably run.
He was in his own home.
Yeah, well.
But at any rate, I just don't understand why it'd have to be this mentality like, oh, it's just okay to, like, kill somebody because
okay. I'm not saying it's okay that he's killed. I'm saying it's okay that he used lethal force on a guy that has already previously attacked him. It's not like this guy was out of the blue charging him. He was attacked in his squad car. He lost control of his gun for a moment. He was getting bashed in. The guy ran away and then turned around and came back at the officer. After the cop was knocked down, he gathered himself, found his gun, probably told the guy to freeze and stop. The guy stopped and turned around and charged back at the cop. The cop chose to shoot. There's a reason why there's no indictment. And this is why. It's the facts of the case.
So the kind of what I'm hearing, at least from Matt Kirk, justice has been served from Chelsea.
Oh, it's not a win-win situation. It's a lose-lose situation. Okay. It's being exacerbated. And it's pathetic. Thank you.
I completely agree. I think we're in a completely lose-lose situation. This guy committed a crime before this happened. I mean, it's not like the guy was innocent walking up the street bouncing a basketball or throwing a baseball with his buddy. I mean, there's...
Sure, he robbed a store, right?
The guy had just robbed a store. I mean, like, the cop knows this going into it, knowing that this is a dangerous situation. And I don't know, and nobody knows what the actual facts are. There's no dash cam on this car.
There was witnesses. The witnesses said that the cop had every right to do what he was doing.
And there were witnesses.
You know anything about the legal system, you know that witnesses are actually the least reliable source of information.
Yeah, and I've understood that too from some of the research I've done in the past. Witnesses don't remember things properly 99% of the time. Trained witnesses, people who are trained to be witnesses, remember a lot more. And they take notes immediately, and as part of my carry training, so my concealed carry training.
Yes, any witness that permit to carry a pistol, police officer is designed to or trained to record things is the best of their memory. That's what they do,
right? And that's part of the training that
you call in to testify, collaborate with the police officer's story. The police officer is going to win every time.
Well, what I'm saying is I was trained how to do that, and that's exactly the case. But otherwise, you're not – people aren't – people make stories in their mind who don't have direct memory of a situation. I'm sorry. There's another report coming in right now.
Yes, that is true. People come up with all sorts of crap isn't true at all, but
well, it's just part of our faulty, like, you know, we're not perfect beings, and our memories are very faulty,
and
that's been proven through scientific experiment after experiment. That's been proven, and so eyewitnesses really don't carry a whole lot of weight with me. But I don't know. I guess I just think at the end of the day, maybe we should be considering. I'm not saying that justice was or was not served here. I mean, I'm just saying maybe we should consider the fact that, you know, we should maybe be training people to take somebody down without killing them. Like, yeah, well, that to me is like the down, easy way out, but at the risk of somebody's life.
To take someone down, usually takes three bullets, not just one.
And so what? They've got more than, you know, one bullet in their gun.
And if they're on drugs, on amphetamine.
And if they can, you know, find somebody's heart pretty easily, how come they can't find the knee? You tell me that.
They don't find the heart very easily.
They shoot for center mass.
Yeah, they just shoot for center mass.
Shoot for center mass. They try to shoot somebody in the chest.
Yeah, that's the best way to take someone down.
They don't aim for limbs.
They're still coming at you. That's just what it is. And a kneecap is smaller than a heart, probably.
You're shooting to eliminate the threat. You're not. If you're at the point where you think that shooting somebody in the leg will take them down, then you can use your taser or you can use your mace.
Yeah, and when a guy's running at you and you only have your gun out, you're not going to reach for your taser or mace or anything else or your billy club or whatever you have on you or handcuffs and do some martial arts move and the guy ends up in handcuffs on the ground like TV shows.
Hey, don't throw that whole TV show crap at me. I'm not suggesting that every police officer should be Kung Fu certified, okay? I'm just saying that maybe since they are professionals, they should be trained to use the least amount of force required to eliminate
drugs.
They absolutely are.
Well, then why are they not shooting to stop instead
they
of shooting
do. That
to
They do. That happens
kill?
All the time.
Once I already explained this. Once you bring a gun out, they have decided that lethal force is justified. They're trained to know when lethal force is justified. They have escalated as far as they can until they believe that they're in imminent danger of great bodily harm, and then they exercise deadly force. If they don't believe that they are in imminent danger of great bodily harm, they do not use deadly force. They use other methods of escalation of force in order to take control of the situation.
If police officers' first reaction
was to use deadly force, everybody who got pulled over for speeding would be shot. I mean, there is a escalation of force that they use.
I think you're taking quite a leap there.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm not saying that this is their first.
I know. I'm using the ridiculous example to be ridiculous. I just want to impress on you that they do have escalations. It's absolutely something that they worry about, and it's part of their training as law enforcement officers. And I'm no fan of cops. Trust me, I'm no fan. But I know that's part of what they go through because I've gone through the same thing.
So you think that there was no other option but to shoot to kill?
There is only the option to shoot to kill once that's been brought up.
No, I mean like in this situation. In this situation,
I don't know.
I don't know.
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea.
Hindsight, I guarantee he wished the guy was still alive. I guarantee the guy wishes he didn't kill him.
I don't know if he does or not. I'm not.
In the situation at hand, this whole family, his life is ruined. The guy will never be the same in the rest of his life for this situation and his family. He puts his whole family at risk.
I disagree.
And you disagree.
I absolutely do.
I don't think you know what's going on down there then.
No, I think I do. I think after the riots in 1992 that all of the police officers who were on the police force are still employed. I think that hasn't been a problem whatsoever. I think that people are fanatics about things in very short term, and they'll be upset about it, and then they'll forget about it.
Why do you think people think that
this is a racial issue as opposed to just being like an excessive force issue?
Because they've made it into one.
Well, if you look at Twitter, it's very clear that it's a racial issue.
There's nothing racial about it. Just because he was black and the cop is white. There was a story just a week or two after this event. There was a blatant thing of over-aggressive use of force from a guy that stole a pop can and laid it on the ground. I talked about this in our podcast in the police brutality podcast, where the guy put the cop – he was waiting for the cops to come. And then he just walked at the cops and they unloaded on him. And I think they unloaded on him because of this whole Ferguson thing and the riots that were going on. But it was a blatant overuse of force. But none of that was ever highlighted. And this was all on video.
Kirk, what happened?
A black kid stole a pop can. He tried to mimic what happened with, what was his name, Michael something, that got shot in Ferguson?
Michael Brown.
He was making an example. He was doing the same thing. The guy was crazy. He stole a pop can. He set it on the sidewalk and waited for the cops to come up. The cops show up, and he's just sitting there talking to the cops. He's not doing what they ask. And he's standing like 10 feet away from them. The cops had every opportunity to pull out their tasers and tase the guy, but they instead unloaded their clips on the guy. Killed him dead on the street. All on video. And no riots ever happened from this. And this was in Missouri.
Why have we not heard about that?
Exactly. That's why. Why is this a race issue in Ferguson? It's because it's whatever the media and certain power players decide to highlight a situation and do it, because the facts are murky in this one. There's no video, and they can just stir up this fear, resentment, anger, and everything. This is all just bullshit. This whole situation is complete bullshit, spun out of control.
This would be a prime opportunity to bring up the polarizing topic and say that it was a race thing. It was
facts,
all on video.
Like, mixed with emotion.
Why not
facts lose out every time.
Hold on a second. Why not use this other example when it's all on video so that people can see clearly what happened and say, well, this is obviously a race thing if you're saying that in broad daylight they had every opportunity to use a taser and didn't.
Yeah.
Like, why would
I don't have the answer for it. Why is it? I'm just highlighting the example of that this is a bullshit issue, this whole Ferguson thing. It's not a race issue. It's created into a race issue on purpose, and it's a damn shame.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kirk.
It has nothing to do about anything. The guy was out of bounds, and he got shot for it, bar none. The cops let off for it, and now there's going to be hell to pay just because of certain people like Jesse Jackson. Stirring people up. Or is it Jesse Jackson? I think it is Tim that's been stirring stuff up down there.
Well, you see it frequently. I mean, this us versus them mentality, whether it's Republicans and Democrats or whites and blacks or straights versus gays, you know, I feel like the media is a tool to bring up these really divisive issues, to tear us apart from each other, and they do a good job of it, and it's really unfortunate. I mean, I've talked to people who really, like, follow, you know, their roots and their history and are very opposed to racism. But by holding those values so tightly, they end up perpetuating the racism that they're against. And, you know, I'll try talking to these people, and it's like, do you think by, like, holding on so tightly to the past that you're bringing it into the present with us? Like, why can't we just move on and stop looking at me like I'm a white person and you're a black person and just look at us like the people?
Well, that's a very good point, and I think what it comes down to is if you can divide the people on something like race, you can distract them from the more important issues that are out there.
Precisely.
I agree.
What the media does constantly. It's all emotion. It's not facts. And we're going to hear some clips if we continue with this GMO thing that are pro-GMO that I would like to highlight the why, how they spin things and how the media and marketers and advertisers spin stuff into creating a false representation around the subject. Just like we talked about GMOs at the beginning, what Eric and I were talking about, how GMO has been going on for thousands and thousands of years, and that's really not the fact of the matter. It's a twist, and it's a murky water thing to create that say that it's the same thing as splicing in certain DNA under a microscope or
opinion.
It's a genetic modification, one way or another. It's modifying the plant, period.
Yeah, it is. Right. That's
regardless
your
of what tool you're using, whether it's a microscope or a knife, you're still modifying.
Yes, but my whole thing
breeding?
Is if a seed flies throughout the air and lands in an island and grows, and over its life it gets changed because of the other organisms on that island. Is that genetic manipulation?
That's what I was going to ask, because breeding, does that count as the same thing?
Well, no. If a seed flies in the air, here's the difference, Kirk. If a seed flies in the air, That's a natural process. What we're talking about is human intervention in what would
otherwise. That's what I'm talking about, too.
How do you think this got developed? Do you think it was by accident? No.
I'm saying your seed flying in the air thing doesn't apply.
But I'm saying it's the same thing, though. That humans taking a seed, and instead of flying, they carry it to an area, and it gets manipulated that way. To me, it's no different. It's natural, and just because it was humankind that carried that seed doesn't mean that it's anything on the same page as what we do today.
It doesn't make it
it's
inherently
genetically
evil.
Modifying.
You know, it doesn't make it inherently wrong or evil. And like, and I get that.
I'm not saying it's wrong or evil. I'm not saying it's wrong or evil.
Kirk, I wasn't trying to say that. I wasn't trying to suppose that you were, okay? I'm just saying that there's no difference whether you use a scalpel or whether you use a microscope. Genetic modification is genetic modification.
I'd agree with that.
Period.
So, with that, Kirk, I'll play this video, which will be sure to rile you up.
All right.
There we go.
Why the big fuss about GMO crops? Are they indeed as terrible as some people say? I'm Brian Dunning, and you're watching In Fact. Welcome to the show that gives you the real facts behind popular myths. Are GMO crops good or bad? Well, the question actually doesn't make sense, because direct genetic modification is a technology, not a product. It's one basic technology for creating new plant varieties. Another basic technology is hybridization, or crossbreeding. Think of the difference between a typewriter and a computer. They're two different technologies that can be used to write a book. But it makes no sense to ask, are books written on computers good or bad? We all understand that it's the end product itself that's important, not the technology with which it was created. Using a computer instead of a typewriter may make the work easier, but it does not inherently result in a book that's either better or worse. Now, by the same token, it makes no sense to ask if GMO crops are good or bad. We have to look instead at the end product. Using genetic modification lets us, for example, copy and paste specific genes, just as a computer lets you copy and paste paragraphs from one document to the other. You can copy and paste a gene that makes the plant better, or a gene that makes it worse. You can copy and paste text to make an exciting book or a boring book. One of the most common GMO crops is BT corn, which stands for Bacillus thuringiensis. Its purpose is to make the corn naturally resistant to caterpillars without requiring a pesticide. Now, to make BT corn, we clipped one gene from a naturally occurring soil bacterium and pasted it into traditional corn. That gene makes the corn produce a protein that causes caterpillars to stop eating. Simple.
We get a corn that's
nutritionally unchanged, and no pesticide has to be sprayed, so the corn's cleaner too. So the next time someone tells you that GMO crops are either good or bad, ask them which variety they're talking about, just as you'd ask what book they liked. Ask them which gene conferred the trait they're concerned about, just as you might ask about a character in the book. Chances are, you'll reveal that they have no idea what they're talking about. Being written on a computer doesn't make a book good or bad, and being developed with direct genetic manipulation doesn't make a plant good or bad. Before
Bullshit.
You jump onto any pop culture bandwagon, understand the basic science, and then make an informed jump. I'm Brian Dunning, and this has been In Fact.
The more you know, Kirk.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You eat a tomato that isn't GMOs, and then you eat a GMO tomato that makes your stomach bleed? I think there's a difference.
Well, here would be the difference, though. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, GMO versus non-GMO. Like the you know, tomato growing in my garden very well might be a GMO, you know, plant. You know, it's just, it's grown in my garden. It's not mass produced. So maybe part of what we need to discuss is not GMO versus non-GMO, but the mass production of food and like the tactics they employ. Like if they're pulling an orange prematurely off the tree so that by the time it gets here, it's ripened, you know, versus being able to take an orange right off the tree and eat it that day when it was supposed to be picked off the tree. You know, so some of those things have an effect on how it tastes and how, you know, and how we can consume it and how we can process
those
items.
We're not talking about tastes. It's all right. Well, this is my main problem with GMOs. I don't mind their existence. I don't mind that the science has evolved to a place where we can do this. It's kind of exciting. And I would love to be a scientist that does it. But there's no way I would eat that stuff. And
you eat Honeycrisp.
The what?
Honeycrisp or Honeycrisp apples. You like those, right? Guess how they got them. U of M, baby.
University of Minnesota. Those are top selling.
Yeah.
And you know what, Kirk?
And they're delicious.
That just means
the science is in.
Hey guys, just so you know, there's looting going on right now.
It's going to happen
in Ferguson. Like, I mean, they're literally calling about it.
The question is, is it isolated there, or is it going to be nationwide?
Hopefully, it doesn't.
I'm not sure, but it's definitely happening right now. They're looting a Boost Mobile store.
But here's my problem with GMOs. Plants are an organism that pollinates, and the seeds spread, and it's a living organism. And yet, our government allows these GMOs to be patented. They patent these seeds, they grow in farms, and those seeds cross-pollinate, genetically modify, by accident, other neighboring farms, whatever happened to be carried through natural means or devious means. And once that happens, the gene is spliced into the new plant, and these companies like Monsanto come and take a kernel of corn or a stalk of corn, and then they go and analyze these neighboring farms and say, oh, you are patent infringing our product. You must destroy everything you have and destroy all your seeds that, yes, you were a small farm. Yes, you sold what you did, you could, but then you always saved the rest of a certain amount of seeds to plant your next year's crop. But since we just cross-pollinated with yours, fuck you now, because now you patent infringe ours. You have to destroy everything you have. And, oh, yeah, and maybe we'll sue you, maybe you're not. And good luck if you're going to survive after that.
Well, this is
nothing good about that at all.
This leads to another discussion, and that's the actual patenting of genetics in general. The overall idea of patenting any living organism's genes. So right now they're mapping genomes of all different animals, all different plants, and they're sending patent requests into the USPTO constantly with their new finds. And they're not actually doing anything new. They're just saying, I saw this first, so now I'm patenting this. And now they're able to sue people based on using or manipulating those genes, which is complete and utter fucking bullshit.
It's destroying farmland. It's creating a monopolistic system through these conglomerates of Monsanto and these mega seed corporations that hold these pens. And pretty soon, all of our plants are going to have to do it. And you can't just undo these GMOs. The research is not done. A GMO corn that's spliced with certain viruses and bacteria that could all of a sudden produce generations down the line that all of a sudden mutate and form these certain other super viruses that are their own Monsanto people say can happen, and you can't stop it. It's out there in nature. How are you going to do it? You'd have to bulldoze an entire town like something Matt was talking about pre-show.
And that's why we have to value, you know, I forget the exact word, but we have to value, you know, the variety that's out there. Like, do you guys remember?
This is not creating a variety, though. That's my point.
Hold on. Yeah, no, I'm on the same page with you. We're in agreement, not arguing with you here. Do you guys remember it was the Irish famine where the scientists were in a facility where they were maintaining the, like, seeds of every different variety of potato that was in existence at that point that they had known. Do you guys remember that?
We weren't alive then.
Well, no, but do you remember learning about it?
I do remember learning about it, yeah.
Okay, and so it's essentially biodiversity. Like, we have to value that. We don't want to get to a point where we lose, you know, all of the different varieties of corn that could possibly exist. And now there's the only corn that we could ever grow is, you know, the corn that Monsanto holds a patent on. Like, we don't ever want to get there. So, like, we need to continue to, like, keep that in the forefront of our brains to not, like, let it all boil down to one.
Oh, trust me, our governments have thought of this, and they've created seed banks throughout the world. They have some in Antarctica. They have them buried underground where this cross-pollination cannot get to. They have these vast facilities of all different species of every plant that they can acquire at these facilities, just pretty much for these reasons alone.
Yeah, maintaining the base of, you know, that biological diversity, which is, you know, essential to, you know, our inevitable success. Like, some things that, like, we didn't know about that ended up causing problems were, like, you know, let's say a neighborhood planted all elm trees, you know, and they didn't vary the type of trees that they were planting in that neighborhood. It was just all elms. They loved elms, so they planted all elms. Well, then what ended up happening is that maybe Dutch elm disease came through. Now all of the trees in that neighborhood were wiped out, whereas if you had you know, planted an elm next to a maple, next to a pine, you know, it protected against one particular disease from coming through and wiping everything out, you know. So we've seen, you know, there are many different reasons why biodiversity is good and essential and protects our future. And this is just one of them. I mean, I don't know that I agree with, you know, any company being able to patent a specific type of genetic strain of a material. That's a whole other, you know, world that we're opening ourselves up to nowadays.
Well, it's what lobbyists have convinced their government to be able to do.
Right, and I do disagree with the idea that, like you were talking about, Kirk, there are situations where a farmer uses his own corn. He's not buying it, you know, from Monsanto, for example, but his neighbor is. And just through the natural process of the world, you know, the wind carries that, you know, patented Monsanto seed. It happens to fall into the dirt in his,
it's,
you know,
not just that,
fridge.
It's pollen. Pollen blows in the wind.
Okay, you get where I'm going with this.
Yes, I do.
Right? Okay. You get where I'm going. You know, so obviously that sucks. The guy's playing by the rules. He's not stealing seeds. He's not doing anything like that. It just so happens through natural processes that a few of the seeds has fallen into his, you know, crop. And now suddenly he is subject to patent infringement and being sued and having to destroy his livelihood over this. And that's really unfortunate.
It's more than unfortunate. It's an outrage. And if something like Ferguson, there should be people rioting over something like that than what this crap going on in Ferguson is about. I don't understand what people get riled up about anymore.
No, but the media does such a good job of distracting you from the real important topics.
Or they spin it away from you to ever get emotional about the topic. If the media sat there and hyped
the topic.
Yeah, if the media sat there and hyped this, a story like this of a farmer having to lose his livelihood because of something like this, there would be outrage all over. But Monsanto is a big advertiser at these media centers, so you can't talk too poorly about that. But anyways, so, all right, I see the defense of GMOs as two main things. The number of people in the world and genetic manipulation of food has gone on forever. We've talked about the manipulation of food going on forever. How about the number of people in the world? That since
and
populations
like, that
are just exploding, this is why we need GMOs, is because we need to feed the world. What do you guys think of that?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of room for population growth. But, Kirk, we have a Monsanto clip that you sent over. Do you want to – should I roll that clip?
Yeah, I think we should play it. It's – what was
this? Is scientists
it's
talk
kind
about,
of a trailer for a documentary.
Okay, so
I don't remember what exactly the documentary was called.
Well, I also have a very long clip that goes over all your concerns about Monsanto, but it's 10 minutes long, and I can stop.
Yeah, I think this one does good. It's about scientists, how Monsanto threatens scientists throughout the world, just kind of how.
Okay.
It's a lot. It really reminds me of global warming, climate change stuff, and how certain scientists are cast out of the mainstream once they challenged the whole premise of global warming.
Sure. So this is 3 minutes. I'll play the clip here. And it is a clip.
The attack on scientists is very well structured by the biotech industry. It's systematic, it's worldwide, it's very coordinated. It's part of the way that they do business.
What's, I think, very unique in my case is that I survived.
One of the reasons why we are lining up now is, of course, to protect ourselves against the attacks which will continue to come, of course, because we are obviously threatening to the markets of the producers of genetically modified organisms and other genetically engineered products.
Our discovery that we were finding transgenic corn maybe 1,000 miles from the nearest legal transgenic corn field was a huge problem for them because it really...
This plays into the idea of cross-pollination that you're talking about, right, Kurt?
Yeah. And thousands of miles away is no small feat.
All right.
Showed very simply and with real evidence that they really did not have control.
No one gets up in the morning saying, I want to go buy a genetically engineered food. They offer no benefits, no more nutrition, no more flavor, no nothing. They only offer risks.
His brilliant design showed that it wasn't the insecticide that caused the problems. It was somehow the process of creating the genetically engineered potato.
They asked me, would you eat it? I said, no, certainly not the GM potatoes we worked on. If I could avoid it, I would certainly avoid it.
The next morning, Arpad Pusztai was fired after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit.
They did not want people to have that knowledge and not want them to have that choice. So this isn't just a story about science. It's a story about knowledge, democracy, and freedom of choice.
They should not use our fellow citizens as human guinea pigs.
Virtually every food that you consume, including you in Germany, has some genetically modified product in it, okay, whether it's soybeans or corn.
So remember that the animal that has been fed on GM has been changed. Now, when you are eating that animal fed on GM, you will be eating a different animal.
So, and I know, Kirk, you'll probably disagree with this, but... do you see a problem, you know, if you're talking about genetically modified organisms, if you have a good quality assurance presence in place? So say you genetically modify tomato, you genetically modify corn or wheat or cotton or a goat or cow or chicken to become more resilient, more productive and nutritious. You know, a lot of times when you're dealing with various measures, various technologies, you have issues that come up. You analyze those issues. You then bring up for discussion what are possible solutions for those issues in order to make a more productive, nutritious type of outcome available, and that's for me. When you're talking about GMOs, I see opportunity. But I'm a technologist. I know that, you know, when you're going through you know, any exercise in this area, you're going to have problems. But I also know that for any problem, there's a solution.
And I think that the intentional manipulation of a seed to make it suicidal after one generation is wrong.
Right, but that's a bad intention. What about a good intention to make it make that seed more productive, less susceptible to bacterial infection?
Idea that you're talking about is wonderful, but I don't think there's magnanimous corporations out there that are going to do that.
Well, you can make more money.
Well, it's not just like right? It'll help them out as well, though. I mean, it's not like they're doing it just to be charitable.
Well, you make more
money.
But
they're also doing it because it can increase their profits. If it can increase their yield, they can sell more.
Yeah, but you know, like, so companies like Monsanto aren't farmers. They're selling the seeds to the
But they benefit.
If they sell a better product, they can get a greater market share.
But they found a way to make it so that the seeds have to be purchased year over year by making the seeds suicidal. So
I think that
was one of their first moves. But
I think in the free market, you have a Monsanto, but you have a company that's genuinely concerned about health and putting out a good product. There's nothing to prevent a quote-unquote good GMO from participating in the market.
Get the lone wolf farmer.
Get the lone wolf button ready, Eric.
Okay.
I think you
this is my real theory on the matter.
Here we go.
What I personally believe. I don't have any facts in the matter besides that our government allows us to eat this food without adequate research. The research that has been done on animals is not that good. I mean, it causes generational issues, not just the specific animal eating the product. It's generational.
And I would argue
generations worse and worse.
I'd argue with you, Kirk, that even the evil Monsanto executives that go to the FDA or the Department of Agriculture, most people have a vested interest in self-preservation, and they don't want to feed themselves products that will kill them.
That's why I'm saying get your button ready. So.
Okay.
My biggest thing is, why do they put fluoride in our water? And they still do today after it shows that it's scientifically proven that it lowers your IQ. There is a specific movement called the eugenicists in this world.
Yes,
and
you are
they
very,
are very highly prominent inside governments throughout the world. And therefore, stuff like what they're doing is population control, is what I purposely vehemently believe in. The stats I've seen is in the United States, only about 15% of the food we eat is GMOs. Yet we produce the most GMOs, so we are shipping it throughout the world into third world countries. And I'm just saying, this is a great way of future population control. And that's why they allow it to continue. And also money and bribery and lobbyists and the big market share. Since Monsanto is a revolving door with higher executives and high administrations, and they go back and forth.
Let me take the flip side of that argument. Isn't more population, higher population level, more cost productive to a corporation? So don't you stand to benefit more from feeding more people? And really, I would argue that we have a lot of land that is available to inhabit, and there are some population alarmists, but I don't really believe there's a shortage of land.
Money is only one form of power.
When you
feel you have the power, when you all of a sudden have all the money that can buy any power you want, there's other forms of power that you want to acquire, and then there's certain things called morality that adhere that as humans consciously that you adhere to before monetary forms a system of greed and or whatever forms of monetary substance you desire, but the eugenicist movement is it's not like this isn't a conspiracy. The conspiracy that I'm talking about is that it's a part of the goals of long-term goals in the movement, and that they infiltrate these higher offices. That's all I can say about the matter. But the thing is, go back to the there's. I wish I had written a blog about this, but there's money, there's control over just power over, you know, being in control of a government, say, or power over law, money, power. What's the other ones? I don't know. But they're all non-liberty aspects. And as a liberty podcast, I would highly try and counter these things. So market share is one that, yes, as a corporation overall, and you can still hire people that are totally corporate driven and that don't, you know, as you go through these videos on YouTube or any research you go into, you're going to find defense of GMOs and cons against it. And it's the defense of clips I find just laughable. They use examples that just go on and try and tie in a benefit that doesn't really say anything.
Well, I don't think that they were necessarily trying to tie in a benefit, but make it clear that the process of genetically altering things in and of itself is not what makes something evil, but rather what types of modifications you're making that can make it either good or bad for you. And well, that's what I think needs to be really focused on is not like, is this genetically modified, therefore it's evil, versus is this genetically modified? Okay, how so? And is this modification something that's good for me, or is it something that's bad for me? So we have to take a second step. We can't just say all GMO is bad. Like Honeycrisp, do you hate them? No, I know for a fact you eat them, and they're awesome.
Yeah,
Are they bad? Just because they're genetically modified, does that make them bad? Not necessarily.
We have to
take another step and not just say, is it genetically modified? If so, it must be bad. Versus, is it genetically modified? Okay, yes. Okay, now let's look and see how is it modified. And then let's look at those modifications and see whether or not they're good or bad for us. We can't just make a blanket statement
Something that can be straightened out in the long run. But like just that last clip that we played, there's certain risks to everything we're doing today. Then I don't know.
There's certain risks to
China
anything in life.
Russia, China have started boycotting GMO foods. What was that clip you sent out, Eric?
I have.
China has quit like 80% of our corn GMO imports.
We're used to
just taking the massive quantities.
But if you talk about that, that's somewhat political.
That's what I say. I don't know if it's just to help their own economies out.
Yeah, I think it is.
Their own food production, their own forms of allies dealing with.
Yeah, there is some politics there.
But you can go anywhere in the world right now, and it's a massive movement of boycotting GMOs.
But there can be, and this is my point.
We don't even get to talk about it here.
GMOs don't have to be bad. Having food that's resilient, productive, and nutritious, and you know, that's one thing that humans have excelled over any other species over, able to form their environment. Being able to do that is not necessarily bad. The bad aspect is being able to do that in a negative way to humanity. So, and that's the point that I've been trying to convey is that you have good actors, you have bad actors. You have to be able to decipher between the two. And, you know, I would argue there are individuals that utilize genetically modified organisms to enhance the human experience. Maybe there are individuals that don't. But in the free marketplace, if we're talking about liberty, those individuals who don't should be weeded out of the market.
That's why there should be competition.
That's the way I see it.
When you have a patent on these things, and then when they cross-pollinate through nature that
all
you can't control,
happen.
You didn't do any negligent
acts. But that's not what I'm getting at, though.
That's not what I'm getting at all.
No, but that is what I'm getting as a morality issue, as a government stance on things. Why would you allow these major corporations
to have such influence on your lives that we're let the free market take its place and say,
well, let's just say they come up with a GMO that inadvertently kills all bees.
There are people that are using it in the wrong way, and we understand that what they're doing is not good for us. So then that provides a market opportunity. And if you have faith in a free market, which I believe as a liberty-minded person that you would see that this is an opportunity for someone to come in and say, yes, we're genetically modifying things, but we're doing it in such a way that it will benefit you.
Yes, but here's my point. We live in an era of that people that dreamed of free markets didn't understand where technology is going to lead us. And we have these certain morality issues to deal with.
I think you get sometimes, Kirk.
Through GMOs that can naturally reproduce themselves
and inadvertently
affect private property. And so as a free market principle, what is that, Eric? Private property. So how do you tie in the thing of private property and the free market and what these people can do? When you have an organism that can naturally cross-pollinate with your private property and you get in trouble for it, let's not even say you get in trouble for it, just that it can happen. Should you allow that to happen, to go and affect people's private property inadvertently, even though they had good intentions? Is that, isn't that a trademark of natural law of liberty?
Maybe you could genetically modify it to make it resistant from Monsanto seeds. Maybe you could make it resistant to what their seeds coming over.
Yeah, why not? Why not, Kirk? Why couldn't you do that?
How about a nanotechnology that these microscopic organisms that all of a sudden can self-replicate and just this black fog grows throughout the world and kills us all?
Okay, gray goo.
The gray goo. It's a theory out there. But
it is a theory.
And it's something that can just all of a sudden spark. It's like our government blowing up A-bombs. Atomic weapons in our atmosphere to see if it blows up the atmosphere. Is that a good idea? No. I'm sorry, it's not. I don't care what scientific information you get from it. The what?
Do you think any of us were going to say yes, that's a good idea, Kirk?
No,
come on.
It was rhetorical.
Let's bring it back down to earth a little bit.
It was rhetorical. Well, I'm just giving examples on the limits of the freedom you can do. There is certain limits. Once you enact stuff that invades other people's private property that you can't control, I think there's a limit to that technology. I'm sorry. That's how I think.
Don't be fighting with you here. I agree. We're not your enemies here. So,
I'm not saying you are. I'm just being emotional over
slow
it.
Slow down, dude. Let's calm down a bit and let's think rationally. We are on your side here. Like, I don't agree that it's okay for, somebody's neighbor who happens to make a decision about what kind of crops he wants to grow and he happens to purchase them from Monsanto and the wind and natural processes of rain happen to make it cross-pollinate with his and he gets in trouble. That obviously is not okay, especially from liberty-minded people. Like, this person didn't make the choice to have his crops contaminated with his neighbor's. It was a natural process, and he shouldn't be penalized for that. I get that. We agree with you. That's not cool. But we have two separate arguments going on here. One is about what can GMO foods provide? Are they inherently bad or good? And then the other argument that we're discussing and the other topic that we're discussing is the whole cross-pollination and the patenting of specific types of genetic modifications of different plants or animals. So there's two conversations that we're having here, and we got to keep them straight.
Sorry, you lost me. I think a little rant about nothing.
With Kirk, I think he has just a suspicion of motivation behind GMO.
No, that's so, just me being a lone wolf conspiracy thing. It has nothing to do with our argument. It's just my own personal thing.
What I've been trying to say.
But what does is what it, as a society
Kirk,
as a
Kirk,
whole,
hey,
we allow certain
Kirk,
people to do things Kirk, that can infect everything.
Shut up for a second.
I think it's all right.
No, you can be quiet. So, you know, what I was saying is I view, you know, GMOs in general as an instrument. You can utilize that instrument for good or for bad. And that's kind of what I've said from the onset of the podcast. And my view, my long-term view, especially if you look at it from, and I think Chelsea was trying to illustrate that, or she was illustrating that relatively well, is that being, you know, we're a liberty podcast, a free market podcast, that if you give it enough time, you allow the free market to you know, to play out, that the soundest, most nutritional, the most cost productive choices will win. That companies like Monsanto, or, you know, maybe companies that you may view to be bad actors, if there are health risks, if there are cancer risks, if there are any other risks, people will choose not to buy those products. Now, they'll choose not to buy those products for, you know, one of the main reasons that comes to mind is the abundance of information now that everyone has access to. So no one's going to want to buy an apple that causes cancer or corn that causes you to get sick. They would prefer to buy a GMO product that makes you, you know, that's nutritional, you know, does what you would expect it to do. So that's my argument when you're talking about GMOs. GMOs don't have to be bad. It's not, you know, obviously there's the cross-pollination issue or there are issues, but this is a newer phenomenon, and, you know, it doesn't hurt to allow it to play itself out. Companies want to make a profit, and they make a profit off of a good product. They don't necessarily want to kill people. It's in their best interest to have a larger population and not a smaller population. So that's my view.
Can I respond?
You can.
Yeah, yep. I'm thankful you stated your view. I don't see why you guys are pointing the finger at me about why that I think GMOs are bad. I said it from the beginning. I think I would love to work on it. I would love to be a scientist that sits there and plays with these genes. I think it would be a great job, an exciting job. But my whole I don't get what this whole – why you guys are attacking me for this.
Not attacking you.
Maybe
I had my own viewpoint, my own theory that I put out there, but
it's the general view that I picked up on, and I could be wrong, is that your view on GMOs is that it's a scheme, or, you know, an intentional plot to make people sick.
I said that's a theory of mine in the inside the eugenics movement that have exactly high-level officials in it, and that's just a theory. It's not the overall theme of GMOs and why they exist in the first place.
I did
not state it clearly.
My argument is that it's in the best interest of any free market participant to produce a product that the people want, and people don't want to be sick.
Yeah, but right. That's the whole thing. When's the last time you chose a GMO product? It's lobbied against labeling GMO.
From what I understand, Matt has a pretty strong viewpoint on GMOs. I feel like I haven't heard much from him.
I think he's sidetracked.
Are you sidetracked by what's going on?
Well, no, I've been listening to both conversations. I'm not completely lost. I've just been mainly quiet. My family's pretty concerned about this whole situation in St. Louis County. But the so if I'm going to try to sum up my overall opinion of the entire GMO movement and what's been happening, I am a huge fan of science. I think that we could do a lot of good by modifying organisms with good intention. However, because of the way corporations are set up in the United States, corporations are beholden to the stakeholders to make a profit. If you can guarantee a profit through making seeds suicidal and being able to make it so that farmers are beholden to you in order to make crops year over year, you guarantee a profit for your stakeholders. I think that entire thing is what's causing the problems that we're seeing today. And I believe that there is a healthy medium that we could see in order to make people happy, healthy, and we could feed more population without causing the problems that GMOs have up until this point.
How would you solve it? Like, what would you propose?
I don't have an answer for that.
Do you think the free market will help us here?
I think educating people would help us here. I don't think that the free market necessarily is I think the free market will work once people are more educated based on what's actually happening.
So the free market will work. It's just a matter of giving people the right information to base their decisions on. So that
that's
they can
what
participate,
I believe, yes,
in the free market and make more informed decisions.
Right, right.
Do you feel like there's a lot of propaganda on either side about GMOs? I mean, because...
I think by far and away, the companies like Monsanto and Cargill and the other ones are winning this debate. They are absolutely dominating it. They're quelling most opposing views. They're making it so that the people who are having opinions aren't able to get labeling even on the packaging that they want to put out. So they're just dominating this issue right now. There's no comparison between the two.
But then why do you find a majority of people, some like 58%, are against GMOs even though they don't know what that
is? Well, we heard a clip earlier today that shows that they're uninformed. They don't understand even what they're opposed to.
Right. Marketing. So there is a certain amount of propaganda out there telling them that GMOs in and of themselves are bad, and people on the majority are buying into it, it seems like.
I think Oprah can stand up and say whatever she wants and convince people to say no.
So we just need to get to Oprah and have her like provide some information on what GMO really is. Is that what you're saying? And then the free market will, take its place.
I just think that people need to be more educated. I don't really know what method to go about it, but it's clear right
Oprah's
now that
not
we
a
have
bad start.
No, she'd be great. She'd be a wonderful person if you could get them to jump on. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, education is the first step to making good decisions, right?
Yeah, and there's spin on both sides of the conversation, and I not to beat a dead horse, but it's a tool. You can use it either way, and I think most technical tools that have been put out there have been utilized to benefit humanity as a whole. And there's no reason to believe that GMOs can't be used in that way as well.
I think that's a fair statement.
I definitely agree. I just wish they wouldn't create laws that protect these companies.
Well, they're rich companies who have a lot of
lobbying.
Yep. You couldn't go and sue them for any of this stuff. But they can sue you.
It's a political system breakdown. It's a systemic deficiency.
Well, that's why I don't see it as a free market instance at all. This is being shoved down our throats, whether we like it or not, and people are awakening to it, and the resistance is forming because they're being awakened to it. And it's still being manipulated at the same time to the spin that we need this. And I think it follows the same thing as positive law that I talk about, that you create a law and you keep needing to adjust it. So why they keep saying that we need this is just a growth of because it is. And it doesn't make it right because it started. And they create issues that make it more and more important that we've fine-tuned the genetically modification. And that's why I say get back to a liberty aspect of the local areas that are naturally resistant to the local vicinity. Don't just shove this product down on any vicinity of the globe to make it work. And I don't see that as a free market libertarian ideal at all. I think that's very counterintuitive and very unsustainable in the long run.
All right. Well, that's fair enough.
The free market and sustainability is a fine line that needs to be talked and hashed out in an educational realm. And yeah, that's what I like this podcast.
All right, folks. heard a lot of opinions tonight. I just wanted to say I really hope for that the things in Ferguson go smoothly and so that the people who are out there in other areas of the country are safe, so that everybody's loved ones are protected tonight, and so that there's the minimum amount of violence and destruction that could possibly happen. With that, this has been Liberty Southwest podcast number, what is it, 34? 34. It's November 24th, 2014. This has been Chelsea Como, Kirk Pettis, Eric Taylor, and myself, Matt Winter. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Adios.
Good night.